Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
Welcome back, and it is now or never. And this is where we actually do our, what we call the special episodes or the presidential campaign episodes. And we're going to be doing this every Monday so that we can kind of dive into what, and right now we're still going through what you need to expect or what we should all be expecting for our Constitution to be obliged by, to be complied to. And so what we haven't finished is the defense stuff, because the federal government really got out of the bag. And the states really failed to hold the federal government accountable regarding the militia and keeping the standing army and all of that in check. So we're going to dive into some of that stuff. And then actually on Friday, what we've been kind of covering is an expansion of this Monday show for Feedback Friday. But just because we've been getting a lot of comments on, you know, these things that everybody's being, you know, being consumed with. And when I say consumed with, it's like the Trump indictments and, you know, and the nuances and the minutiae of all of that. What I'm going to do is we're going to dive into these presidents, or I should say these candidates for president, because they're all vetted. They're all coming up and they're all basically being aligned to find out who has political viability for the Uniparty. In other words, you don't make it onto a ticket anymore unless you have political viability. And so one of the things that I've noticed is that there's a sophistry. There's a political sophistry, and it is very deceptive. And there's a lot of people that are, you know, shifting and shuffling around. And I can't believe how many people, not that you listening to the show don't understand this, but there are a lot of people that when they hear a politician use the sophistry, use the deceit of making a citation regarding Eisenhower's military-industrial complex. Oh, well, you know, this guy really sounds like he's the right guy because he's in line with, you know, Eisenhower's, you know, warning us about this perpetual warfare that the United States would be getting involved in. Now, in basically examining all of the different wars we've been involved in, a lot of them we just have had no real reason to be in there as far as for our presence, but we actually took and have had the wrong foreign policy. And we haven't even dived into the foreign policy, because if we had the right foreign policy, then we would have gotten involved in possibly Vietnam. We would have gotten involved in possibly Korea if those nations that wanted to preserve liberty, instead of us just coming and fighting a war for them, they would have become states. And the United States would not be what you see today. The United States would actually be it would be the diametric opposition to what the statists wanted to do. But because the statists have been able to actually invoke policies and put America on this path for well over 100 years, folks, well, this is why we're in this situation. But I believe that back in the 1800s, prior to, even to the Civil War, you know, had we actually got things right during Monroe's presidency, you know, it's all hindsight's 2020, right? And so it's all, you know, speculation possibly, but I really don't think so. I really think that had America become the true champions of liberty and become the, I'll just say, that beacon on the hill, that many nations would have come and would have gone through the process as the revolutions for liberty started occurring around the world. even though many nations had taken our Constitution, that was not enough. They never really truly formed the necessary government elements, and they never structured themselves. And all they did was to basically use our Constitution like lipstick on a pig. So when I look at these different political candidates, whether they be on the Democratic side, like JFK Jr. or whatever, the Kennedy Prince, because remember, we have monarchs. And if you're from a family that is beloved politically, then you've become a prince. So Kennedy, who's out there actually citing Eisenhower, is getting and triggering a lot of conservative people. And he is actually a very dangerous, basically a very dangerous deception. And I say this because anyone that actually uses or cites Eisenhower's military-industrial complex but doesn't actually call him out for using that as a sleight of hand in establishing the medical, educational, and welfare industrial complexes. Because if you really do your research, folks, Eisenhower is the one that stood up these even more destructive industrial complexes here in America. Look at what the education system is doing to us today. He's the one that opened the door and actually started basically making it possible for the federal government to pervert and subvert everything that we're doing. And so I have a hard time. I really have a hard time when I listen to these people, and they don't come off as they're really smart on the Constitution. Because bottom line, is the fighting of war, declaring war, is that something in the Constitution? Yeah, it is. That's the one thing that's actually constitutional that our government does. We may not like it, and we understand the cost, and we understand, but if we were, I would just say righteous, if we were actually living to the Constitution and abiding by it, we wouldn't be getting into these wars unless liberty was on the line and liberty could truly be saved. There's no reason why we would need to send young men to go fight a war. And unfortunately, we've been duped for so long by the deep state and by these globalists that we're now in a position where we're going to have to probably fight a war again for the cause of liberty, for our liberty, not for somebody else's. See, had we actually been supporting liberty throughout the world, it would be a completely different story, folks. But I'm here to tell you that the best defense is a great offense. A stellar offense. And this is why, you know, I've given you an overview on foreign policy. The key thing is we need to actually be championing liberty and becoming a state in the United States to all of these states, especially the ones that are being manipulated right now into sealing the deal and falling into communism, such as Taiwan, Crimea. These people, if they actually had an election and chose to become a state in the United States, imagine the ramifications of that. Because even though Taiwan and America may get a lot of saber rattling from China, all of a sudden the people in China would all of a sudden start going, well, we want to break off from China too. And you would start to find resistance to where China would have a hard time being able to quell the billions of people that they're controlling. Even though they may have a great military state, when it comes to the masses actually getting out and demanding, then, you know, what do? They punish everybody? They kill everybody? That's not very likely. And what ends up happening is China actually is going to be exposed as being the evil player on the board right now, just like Putin. But Ukraine and America allowing these nations to be manipulated for our benefit, for the globalist benefit, actually, not really for America's benefit, for the globalist benefit. The fact that we're utilizing these and how we've been exploiting them. I mean, what we've been discovering from the Bidens and the Obamas and the Clintons and so forth, folks, America, you know, it has had it wrong for a long time, and we've had some really bad players moving the globalist game forward. So it's important that we start actually examining all of these things, because when we're really going to be talking about it, most of these things actually do fall under the president. You know, how is the military going to be formed? Well, the Constitution is pretty clear, and the president could actually be following the Constitution. He could actually challenge the constitutionality of the military, because those things are actually within the Constitution. And so this is why going through the nuts and bolts of our military and reshaping it to actually be constitutionally aligned, so that we're really not, you know, in a position where we're being manipulated anymore, where, you know, we're actually become a standing army, where we actually have forces that are sitting in and occupying, you know, for strategic interest, you know, these different countries and so forth, Japan, Germany, you know, where we actually still have occupying forces. We shouldn't even be in that. But anyway, couple of the obligatories. I just want to remind you that we want to get, and we're going to start working, and hopefully I'll be able to tell you soon, get more content up on YouTube. And what we want to do is get these ratification debates up on YouTube and the lessons on the Constitution up on YouTube. I know that we've got a lot going on, and I know there's a lot of people that are, you know, trying to get me to get things done, and I'm being pulled in a lot of different directions. And I just ask for your patience, because we've got family things going on. And so, you know, those things are important. I have to make the time and make sure that my quality time is available, and I avail myself to my family first and foremost. So anyway, I know I've got introductions to respond to and other phone calls to make and other work to do. But at this point in time, and to all you fathers out there, I hope you had a great Father's Day. With that, let me just dive back into where we left off, or kind of start off where we left off. We were really reconfiguring the Department of Defense to align with the Constitution. And where we really left off was integrating the county militia rotations. Now, this would be the guidance in the standing of, I would just say, standards that needed to be implemented nationwide. Now, got to remember that the federal government only has certain controls over the militia while it is not federalized. That equipping and establishing standards, the discipline, and the training, helping with the training and getting the states involved. So some of the best ways of doing that is actually having, we will call them drills or exercises, where, you know, we'll actually work within a couple of states where things actually, you know, play out, where it happens in a county, it spreads throughout the state, and then the state, you know, calls forth the militia. So we have to have enough of an orchestrated drill to where we, you know, exercise the chain of command, we exercise the operations and operational readiness and those types of things, so that, you know, in between states and so forth, we have a very lean and efficient and very effective militia system. So as we start breaking it down, because what we want to do, and one of the things that we really, as the President of the United States, we need to start championing, the executive needs to start championing the concept of enforcing of the laws of the union, as well as the states and as well as the counties. We all need to be, you know, in the perfect society, we all abide by the laws. That if we don't like the laws, then we work on changing or amending or adding. And we need to get to a point where we have a consensus, not, you know, see, when people start using money, when people start using influences to change things, to get people to go along, that's corruption. And there should be no place in America for corruption. None. But in America, we have a lot of very, very successful people. And as a matter of fact, just going into the news, I find it ironic that China has basically, you know, called out Bill Gates as their friend. Actually, I think it was their whoever their diplomat is that's been meeting with our ambassadors and so forth. If you hadn't heard, they basically said he's the only friend that they've actually met with in a long time. Well, that's because Bill Gates is a lapdog for the globalist agenda. He's a lapdog for the implementation of China's governmental control throughout the world. You know, when we see what he's been doing, why is he still a citizen of the United States? Why is he not being tried for treason? Folks, the fact that he's been over there investing and in empowering them, they are an enemy of the United States. You know, the fact that, you know, we created this little label of the nation's most favored status, they've had a strategy from the beginning for global dominance. So anyway, moving on. Due to the constitutional responsibilities for the militia to enforce the laws of the union, the militia must be integrated into law enforcement. So you have been going here, right? And municipal law enforcement actually didn't exist in the union. The New York Police Department wasn't even created until the 1820s. We didn't have municipal polices, or I should say police enforcement in any of these cities for a long, long time. So why did we start creating municipal police force instead of the militia? The militia basically is accountable to who? The sheriff. And the sheriff was, you know, the county, you know, top cop. Well, technically, if you've got a prosecutor for the county, then the prosecutor becomes the top cop, because he's the one that actually says, okay, go arrest these guys, because we've got a conviction, we've got a grand jury, because the Constitution demands that before anybody is arrested and held accountable, you have to have an indictment by a grand jury. And so the grand jury needs to be operating. Now, could the sheriff with the county commissioners, they could have empowered the sheriff that way. But if the county commissioners would have done that, then they would not have created the proper three branches of government. And so when we go down the path of how government really should be forming, obviously our representatives should have the decision making, the law making, and all of that power in basically ruling us, but the executive is the one who actually faithfully executes those laws. And the executive actually has emissary responsibilities. In other words, the executive actually can have, you know, people going out as representatives to create deals with other counties so that we can create, we'll call it, economic opportunities. Because economic opportunities benefits the county. This is the lowest level where you should actually see that type of stuff happening. The state should not be able to give favors to, you know, very specific counties, because they should be required, based on the state constitution, had we followed the U.S. Constitution, the uniformity requirement would have been levied upon the state to ensure that it treated each county equally. I'm telling you, what the Supreme Court and the liberals have done in basically decimating the position of the counties in our states, they basically decimated our Republican form of government. And so getting back to municipal law enforcement, if we actually use the militia, as a matter of fact, the sheriff would have a higher concentration of deputies just in a municipality or within a city. And this is all due to the fact that that's where more people live. And so if he has an apportionment of 10%, then if you look at the one big city of the county, that's where most all of the deputies are going to be living. But not only that, that's where the inactive reserves. Remember, we've got these two forces here, or actually two levels of forces. You've got those who are, you know, serving those who are on call. And then you have the inactive reserve. And then within the inactive reserve, you have those that are, I'll call, in an on-call status, in a reserve strategic on-call status. And then those who are, you know, the last resort. And those are people that have either served or that they actually have, they've put themselves into other positions where they're just limited. Now, this is something that the counties, the states, people really need to start grasping of, you know, making sure that only a certain percentage of people can have the exclusion, but they still have to have the training. They still have to have, you know, some on hands experience and those types of things with the militia. Every person has to have some on hand experience. But those who actually become, you know, a very productive person in business or what have you, then should they necessarily be on active call? We could leave it to them. And as a matter of fact, I think that the county really needs to come up with some processes and, or I should say, some policies of how to fairly do that so that we can allow people to actually, in their inactive status, be able to, you know, I'll just say, be productive in the county in ways that actually benefits the county. In other words, you know, those who actually prove that they're serving, and not serving in a way to undermine the county, but serving in a way to help bolster the county. Because in a righteous society, you know, you have far less narcissists. In a righteous society, in an enlightened society, you don't have people that are actually trying to undermine and seize control and those types of things. But not that you wouldn't have that. You just wouldn't have that many, because most people would realize that that is a very destructive path, and we would actually have laws and or enforcements of being able to say, look, you know, you're trying to improperly influence people for your own benefit and not for the good of the people. And so you need to, you know, cease and desist, or sometimes they actually cross these lines where they use their money, they use that type of influence. And, you know, I dream of a world and time where we rid ourselves of that type of thing, because money can be, it is the fulcrum of corruption. And when I say the fulcrum, it is what evil people use to basically lever us or to manipulate us and lift us into a direction that they want to place us so that they can have and obtain more and more control. Now, we live in a time where, you know, evil is going to exist, but we can, you know, so did the framers. The framers actually lived in that time, but they were living in a world of enlightenment and discipline where they were actually ridding themselves of that. What happened? Well, there's a lot of things that happened. You know, the pagan society, the paganistic rituals. I mean, all of these things that were really, you know, from, I'll just say, from sources of evil and evil influence. You know, the unions. When the unions came in, the unions were an evil influence of labor. I know if there's people out there that may be working in the union, and they really think the union is good. But it's not. It's an institution. It's basically a parasitical institution, because it lives off of the work of others, and it creates a level playing field for all when nobody deserves to get something that they don't deserve. In other words, if you're not willing to actually work hard, maybe you can't. As an employer, and having had people that were able to really do good work, they got their promotions, they got their pay raises. Those people who, you know, they had a lot of distractions in their life, they just had family things going on, they weren't able to. So it's not that they, you know, they were fired necessarily. Now, we can get back and talk about it. I forget who the CEO is. I'll look it up. The CEO of General Electric, and I'm going down a rat hole here. But bottom line is, we have to start using paradigms that actually bring in enlightenment. We'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, I just remembered who the CEO was. It's Jack Welch. And Jack Welch had a policy that the bottom 10% were let go on a yearly basis. So they would do an assessment. And after a while, General Electric really became a premier operating machine. And it was getting more and more difficult to find the bottom 10%. And so it also got kind of subjective and everything else. And having worked in an engineering company, I know that there are ways that you can actually take subjectivity out of it. You can clearly go down a path of, I'll just say objectivity, to where, everybody kind of realizes, yes, I am not at the same level as everybody else. Now, we have to really start looking at how we can do that. And this is where I believe leaders will arise to the occasion. Because in America, if we're doing the right things, if we're, if we're putting not just ourselves, but, our society, as a very integral part of our happiness, then, because look at our governing. Our governing is based upon the protection it's supposed to be based upon. And this is what the framers created and gave us, a government that was designed to protect life and property, and boil it down to that. And so we all have a responsibility of actually enforcing those types of principles, protecting life and property. It's not to have a career in the militia. I believe that technically we could probably function with, probably 50% of the county being a part of the active and inactive and so forth. But we actually have to get everybody. Everybody needs to be at least familiar, have at least, the training and the understanding, because you can't have people inside and outside that don't understand, because this is how the dialogue can go. If you don't, those who don't know become critical of those that do, and those that do become critical of those that don't, and it actually creates factions, and so and there's all sorts of ways that factions will arise. Somebody that feels that they have been unjustly, treated or what have you. That always happens. And there's, I believe, a way of actually dealing with that, because I've worked with really righteous people that do not allow subjectivity to come in. Just because you had a personal run-in, we need to start learning not to have these personal feelings when we've had a run-in, because we've personalized it. You call it a personal run-in because you think it was personal. And if it was done right, there should never have been anything personal about it. So I understand that there's a lot of things about human behavior that need to be fixed, but we do have, and we can have, an education system that actually helps us become far more adjusted in being able to take criticism. Can you imagine that? People actually being able to take criticism. Even myself, even myself, when people criticize me, I really do try to take it. And, you know, and I think it's human nature that we try to either defend, or what we try to do is we try to, you know, help somebody understand what or why we did those things. That's human nature. And 9 times out of 10, it's always best. And I have a problem with this. It's always best. And we need to teach each other this. Take the criticism for what it was and not as a personal attack. And if we can do that, and those people who, you know, so there's some real rules that you need to apply here. These are just fundamental rules, folks. But I'm driving into this because we're talking about how we can actually create a very enlightened militia. Some of the basic rules is you always praise in public, you reprimand in private. And sometimes if you have to do reprimanding in private, sometimes it's best to have, you know, a couple of witnesses, you know, a witness for both sides, so that, you know, and it's well documented. As a matter of fact, you know, I'm all for transparency. Let's make sure that, you know, we can all look and say, could we have done that better? And let's start doing it better. But the way to doing that is we have to be objective. We have to be open to, you know, and actually willing to, one, discipline ourselves, and open to actually seeing the bigger picture. You know, if we live in a macro world, we're always cognizant of all the ramifications of what one little act that we're going to do will do. Anyway, let me just keep moving on here, because I want to kind of get away from it. But it's hard not to dive into these types of personal behaviors when we're talking about enforcing laws and that type of stuff. Because, and this is the beautiful thing within this framework that the Lord gave us in this Constitution. Just imagine if somebody comes along with a law, if some tyrant creates a law that is really oppressive, do you really believe that we're going to enforce it upon ourselves? Absolutely not. If it is a righteous law, something that is for everybody's benefit, then everybody will acquiesce. Everybody will say, yeah, this is better. Like disbanding the parties and saying we're not going to have factions anymore, and we're going to make factions illegal, so that when we find a faction, we'll go in and basically make sure that, you know, that faction is decimated or at least exposed, and the players are exposed and what have you. And there's probably really good ways of dealing with that. I'm not a psychiatrist. I just know that with all of the advancements, we could use all of these advancements of technology, education, and enlightenment to actually hurl us into the 22nd century with, you know, with a, I'll just call it a comet tail of liberty just flaming behind us, where we actually launch forward into, you know, sounding like Star Trek, a new frontier where governing and enlightenment are entwined, where they're integrated together. They're inseparable. Anyway, here's the most important question that's not asked. When we actually start looking at the municipalities, laws enforcement, and all of that, why did the states, here's the question, why did the states not integrate into their constitutions the utilization of the militia for the execution of the laws of the state, and all of the laws of the state must be in pursuance to the state constitution, and that the state constitution must be fully compliant to the Constitution for the United States? So why is it that they just didn't do that? Well, that's because, folks, these people were good. And they didn't think that they needed to actually put that in writing. You know, they didn't tell us that the Constitution was written on parchment or whatever material it was written on. They didn't tell us the ink that they used. They just did it. You know, they didn't give us all of the nuances and all the details that in the bigger scheme of things, it really don't matter. The bigger scheme of things is, what is it that, you know, the Constitution actually says? What was the intent behind the Constitution? Not the parchment, not the ink, not these little, these minutiae details that, you know, really do not provide, you know, the clarity of what we need. So reconfiguring, again, we're still focused on reconfiguring the DOD to align with the Constitution. I, as a president, would advocate that police forces be transitioned into militias using what we already have disclosed as an active and inactive militia with active ready reserves to deal with surges of crime. In other words, we need to get everybody educated on, you know, how to serve in the militia. That's the real problem. That everybody has this responsibility. The judiciary matters will be covered later. However, common law courts need to be restored and common law grand juries need to be formed. So we'll deal with this a little bit later. And we need to actually use the common law grand juries and common law courts for criminal indictments, as well as challenging unconstitutional laws, unconstitutional governments, unconstitutional properties. You know, in other words, the counties need to start really auditing, you know, what should the county really be holding? Now, as they're presented by the county's constitutional compliance office, so this is one of the things that we'll have to get into later, and I've talked about this and how important this is, that we actually have a constitutional compliance office within the county, that it has to start at the county. It actually then finally gets integrated into the state. Because if the states and the counties are all working on constitutional compliance, then everything that the federal government is doing starts really glowing red that needs to get rid of, dismantled, and so forth. Thus, the reshaping of laws as we basically get, you know, the militia engaged in enforcing all laws and replacing all of the security, all of the law enforcement within the county, reshaping of the laws back into the framework of the Constitution, removing conflict laws, or, you know, conflicting laws, I should say, and practices such as domicile, traffic, and property, you know, private property laws and practices to ensure practices of tyranny are no longer being used, where government is actually controlling us. You know, I'm not sure if you know, folks, and I'm just going to, this is another rat hole, but I'm going to use this as an example. The auto industry has been working with government in onboard diagnostics to allow government more and more access to control so that they can control you in your car. They can shut your car down. They can actually seize control and, in some cases, do fundamental operations. Eventually, they're going to get to a point where they can convert your car into a UAV. Now imagine this. If you have an evil government that has those types of controls, they could literally take a good person or a person that they perceive as a threat and actually take control of that car while they don't even know it and use that car in a suicide mission to try to attack somebody else or what have you. And they could even cover up the details that they did it. Why would we want government and the people that have those types of powers? This is something that is just like head-scratching, you know, epiphany. What the heck are we thinking? Why are we allowing them to have these controls? Those types of things have to be rooted out, and we want to make sure that government doesn't have those controls. They're supposed to be stewards in making sure that our liberties are protected, that the people, all the people are protected. And so I can't even think of a situation or a rat hole to dive into where we could actually start deciding where, you know, these people, you know, we're going to protect and these people we're not. I can't even see that. And so, you know, if you look at our legal system is supposed to be designed to make it hard, if not impossible, for an innocent man to go to jail. So that it, you know, the paradigm is it's far better for a guilty man to actually, you know, not go to jail than it is for an innocent man to go to jail. And so hopefully I said that right, so that, it, you know, so that you actually make sense that, you know, we have to have measures that actually, you know, present those types of things, that, you know, we're protecting everybody as much as possible. So leading in fixing the states and the state constitutions, now that we kind of are moving away from the DOD, we've really clarified that the Navy is going to have the strategic responsibility of protecting America from external threats, period. That was the design of the Navy. The design of the Army and, the Air National Guard are all these functions of technology today as applicable in warfare is the responsibility of the militia. And we'll actually need to start getting this, and we need to start getting this smartly so that we're ready when the potential of an invading force would come into America and actually try to seize control. So in leading the fix of the state constitutions, I, as the President of the United States, would encourage the counties to start working together on constitutional compliance to call for fundamentally as you move forward and start creating. Remember, there is an exit criteria for counties to become constitutional, common laws and those types of things, creating a county constitution. So as we create these constitutional counties, that these counties would then actually call for and actually write or, create and initiate a constitutional convention to create a new constitution that basically delegates very limited powers to the state, basically keeping all residual powers to the counties and the people respectively. In other words, having the same kind of language in a state constitution as necessary to ensure that the state government doesn't become this tyrannical. I mean, I'm looking at every single blue state out there. Every single one of these blue states really have tyrants where they're exercising. I mean, I can speak for Newsom, and Newsom is a tyrant. This guy should actually be removed and should be banned from being a politician ever again. Inslee should. I mean, I don't know all of the names of all the different governors, but all of these who are exercising and driving agendas that are, destructive to liberty, violations of the Constitution. I think it's Brown down in Oregon. All of these people should be removed. They should be basically punished, and they should be banned. Now, the punishment, I leave to the justice system and the people. I think the people will have some hangings. I think that I have to, I don't want to be the one that encourages capital punishment, but I do believe that we really do need to stiffen the laws and let everybody know, that we're moving towards more severe punishments, because the reason why America was good was because America had and demanded high standards of its people. You stole a horse, you were hanged. You steal a car today, that's almost the same thing. But really, when we look at it, when we actually look at, the intent of stealing a man's horse versus a horse was probably everything. It was a huge investment. That was a huge piece of property for a man to be able to get around, to getting work done. I mean, that horse was very, very important. But taking of a life, instantly a capital punishment. I mean, and these things were done publicly. And people would come, whether it be morbid or not, people would still come to witness the punishment, the ultimate punishment, a capital punishment of a person, so that everybody acknowledges, and as hard as it is, everybody would at least acknowledge the fact that there is, I'll just say, there are consequences to what you do, and there's certain lines you cannot cross in this society. And if we actually create those stiffer punishments and actually make it harder, then everybody will start understanding, I don't want to have a quick path to death. Now, we have the technology today, folks, by the way, to actually determine whether a person is being honest and lying or not. or what have you. The polygraph was one of those things. And so I'm going to, this is a rat hole, but this is all about enforcing laws. If a person is convicted and you know, it is, there's no quibbling about, you know, whether the person's rights were, you know, violated through the process. In other words, the prosecution didn't pull any shenanigans, suppressing any witnesses or any evidence and those types of things. And so if a person really wants to have a retrial to actually prove their innocence, then I believe that all they need to do to actually expedite that trial is to willingly submit themselves to a lie detector test. And I mean a full battery lie detector test, not just a polygraph, because a polygraph can be beaten, but a voice stress analyzer. They have a lot of different technology to determine whether a person is lying or not. And letting that technology be used to save innocent people. Because if these people really were innocent, then it needs to put the challenge back on. Because if they actually pass with flying colors of all of these different technologies, you know, folks, if we can actually make it to where this technology actually can exonerate a person from a crime, then the challenge needs to go back to the prosecutor and law enforcement to go check your case, check your facts out again. Maybe we don't have a person, but remember, our system was designed to ensure that no innocent man would go to jail. And so if we use technology to convict a person, we should be able to use similar technology if we can come up with something that gives us, you know, and what's the threshold? 99%? Is that the threshold that we demand to make somebody innocent in a system that's supposed to be innocent until proven guilty? So we have to have some threshold of saying, you know what? With all of this technology, we can narrow it down to say that, you know, there's nobody that can beat this system, these lie detector, polygraph, brain scan, all of these things. And, you know, and it have a reliability of over 90%. I would actually be an advocate to say then we should really look at allowing that person to go free. And letting the prosecutor reexamine how to do this, because... and not necessarily look at this person, you know, unless they get newer evidence. And then all of a sudden, if we start finding that, you know, this system can be beaten, but I don't think so. Voice stress analyzing, the mind mapping, the types of technologies that they have today to determine whether a person's lying or not, it is pretty overwhelming how to beat that. I mean, a person doesn't have that ability to control their mind and their body functions and all of those types of things when they're lying. And so anyway, I just wanted to present this to you so that you can actually start looking at, you know, how we can actually improve in a system of enlightenment. But anyway, so I'd encourage counties, getting back to this, to have their constitutional convention as they create constitutional counties. When you have a majority of the counties that have created constitutional counties, their own constitutions and so forth, then forming a state constitution that will then leave the powers. And then the people can actually start saying, if we want to have government health care, it's going to come at our expense and, you know, via, you know, our governing and our control over our government. I want to be clear here, folks, that when we really start looking at, you know, how we govern, it is far better to have your local county be the only, quote unquote, tyrants available, the tyrants capable of ruling you, because you have the best chance of overcoming and overpowering that type of government. When it comes to centralized governments like the state and like the federal government, boy, you know, when that starts happening, that level of corruption, that level of oppression is, look at the warfare we're going through today because of our federal government. Look at all of the different warfare tactics. we should not be in this situation. We should not be in it at all. So before doing this, again, like I kind of alluded to this, the county constitution, before they're actually having a constitution to form the state constitution, they need to adopt a county constitution delegating all powers. And this is where they really want to determine what powers they want to have. Do they want to have educational? Because remember, the federal government doesn't have any powers over education other than the militia and militia training. That's it. And so the states would then have, what kind of powers did you want to give the states? You know, and I'll tell you, the progressives will want to give the states everything. But when you have enough constitutional counties, you'll be able to keep that from happening. And you'll also need to really look at making sure that the only way you can amend your state constitution is through a majority of counties, not through a simple democracy, just like the U.S. Constitution. That design is brilliant. Is the Supreme Court going to tell us that it's not brilliant for a state, but it's brilliant for the nation? Are you kidding me? Why would we be doing this? Why would they want to subject us to democracy other than the fact that that's how they're trying to destroy us, that the Supreme Court has actually made rulings to help, you know, help perpetuate or help, you know, accelerate the destruction of this republic. Now, so prior to holding these conventions, the county commissioners need to hold a series of virtual meetings to address and resolve many important problems before organizing their own convention. As a matter of fact, they need to be communicating amongst each other to start so that this can kind of be done, you know, in parallel, not in serial, that it gets done in one county. And what we really need to do is we need to have the counties kind of recreate the state constitution that they can constrain the state and make it a general government. So they actually kind of have to agree with what powers that they really need to maintain down at their level. And then they can stipulate in the state constitution, let's say healthcare, because that seems to be the, you know, the important thing for too many people, conservatives and so forth. And so what we need to do is, do we really want healthcare to be done by, you know, profit corporations? Or do we want to actually move healthcare back to the churches and allow the churches to be able to do that? Because they're the ones that gave us this health system. They're the ones that gave us the Enlightenment. They're the ones, because they actually clinged to these concepts of open academia, that academia be free. And when we moved away from that, that's when the freedom of academia died. So anyway, we need to look at how we can basically constrain and, you know, move down this path of helping the counties understand what powers that they really believe that are necessary. Maybe the powers of the actual regulating of the businesses be done more down at the county level, but maybe there's some need for the states to have, you know, some supreme controls over businesses, maybe for environmental purposes. Maybe you want to have the state actually have some of these controls or these barriers, you know, or central disease control. But we don't want the federal government to possess them. We want to remember and maintain that as long as we keep powers constrained at a lower level of government, the better off we are. And to minimize government's control over domestic matters, because this is where they start rearing this tyrannical, destructive head. So we'll pick it up where we left off. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.